form a line, so that we will pass the puja offering around. We start off with a tray, offered it to the Buddha, Kuan Bodhisattva, and all the great beings. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu means we rejoice with the offering. We rejoice with all the wholesomeness and goodness of whatever that has arisen. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. 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 You have to like this too, yeah. Sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Ah, like it. You can. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Never mind. Just leave it. Leave it. No need. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Yeah, put it back there. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. I will touch it and offer separately. Sadhu, sadhu. You can stand here and collect. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. 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 Can put here. One bowl, put here. Put here. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. The flower put in the middle. In the middle. Sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu, 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 sadhu, sadhu. Okay, thank you so much. Yeah, you all can go back to your seat. Yeah. Just put it in front. Okay. Yeah. Put that. Yes. Okay. Thank you so much. Yeah. You all can be seated. Then there is a chanting book in front of you. For the benefit of those who just came in and those who are new, I will just repeat what I explained earlier on. The reason for this puja offering is to help us develop the understanding of the Buddha's teaching. The Buddha actually recommended this devotional practice, or what we call puja offering. We have this pre-puja before we start any Dhamma session or sharing. So puja are to develop devotional faith and understanding of what this teaching is all about. So when we make offering to the Triple Gem, the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha, we rejoice Rejoicing is one of the most important mind state that can open up our heart and make us feel good. And it is also one of the 10 meritorious actions. When we rejoice, we develop more and more goodness and wholesomeness. Then this offering and puja has its great significance. After we will start the official puja, then you will understand. We will develop the faith. We are understanding who the Buddha is and how special his teaching is. He is not only enlightened, he is the fully enlightened one. So with this understanding, your faith becomes very strong. Then his teaching can awaken living beings, can transform living beings. And because of that, he will drive you on to cultivate this teaching of his. So the first two spiritual faculty of Saddha, or confidence in the Buddha and his teaching, together with the virya or spiritual zeal to cultivate this teaching and to walk this way, will be developed. Then when your mind has this confidence or faith in him and his teaching, your mind becomes very calm and very composed. And this is how you develop a wholesome mind. Then after that, we will pay respect to the Triple Gem. We will recite the chanting to develop the understanding of all this puja offering and chanting. Reverential salutation is also a meritorious action. After that, you will chant the salutation to the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha. Then after that, you renew your precept, you take refuge. All these are very wholesome, and it brings about a lot of understanding. Then we also recite the puja offering to understand their significance. Then from there, we will invoke the power of aspiration through that clear understanding, so that it will help us to walk this path of Dhamma much more easily. Yeah. All this you will start to understand after we go through. Then after the puja, we will have about 30 minutes of meditation. During the meditation, you can develop your understanding. Then after the meditation, we will commence our Diamond Sutta class. Okay, now you compose your mind, develop the faith, the Saddha, Virya. Then we will start the puja chanting. We will chant the salutation to the Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the great beings. Okay, together we shall recite. Namo Bunshi Shijia Moni Fo. Namo Bunshi Shijia Moni Fo. Namo Bunshi Shijia Moni Fo. Namo Guan Shi Yin Pusa. Namo Guan Shi Yin Pusa. Namo Guan Shi Yin Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Okay, we will pay respect to Triple Gem, the Thai tradition. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava. Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami. Okay, now we shall proceed with the chanting. Turn to page 4 of the chanting book. We will start off with the Vandana, which is the salutation to the Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dutiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dutiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Dutiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tatiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tatiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
We are at page 4 for those who are new. We are now going to recite our five precept, renewal of five precept, Pañcasīla, the last paragraph of page 4.
Panatipata viramani sikkhapadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Adinadana viramani sikkhapadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Kamesu micchācārā vīramaṇī sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Musāvādā vīramaṇī sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Surāmerayā majjhapamādathānā vīramaṇī sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi.
Now we shall recite the puja offering, starting with Padipa puja, which is the offering of light.
Ganna sarapaditena dipena tamadansina tiloka dipang sambuddhang pujayami tamonudang ganda sambarayutena Dopenahaṃ sugaṃ hena pujaye pujaniyaṃ taṃ puja bhajana muttamaṃ vanna ganda gunopetaṃ etaṃ kasuma santatin pujayāmi munindāsa Siri pada sarorohe pujemi buddhaṃ kusumena nena punnena mattena ca hotu mokhaṃ puppaṃ milayati yata idaṃ me kāyo tathā yati vinassa bhāvaṃ ādivāsetu nobante pāniyāṃ parikāpitāṃ anukampāṃ upādaya pattigānhātu muttamāṃ.
Okay, turn to the last page, page 18. We will chant the significance of this puja offering. And through our understanding of their significance, we will make the appropriate aspiration. Understanding the significance of offering of light, we shall make the following aspiration.
May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness of ignorance therein.
Understanding the significance of offering of water, we shall make the following aspiration.
May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma
that cools and doses off the fire of all defilements within our mind. Understanding the significance of offering of incense, we make the following aspiration. May all morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthens our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana. Now we shall make the overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits born of this offering, may our spiritual faculties of Sada, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers. Sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we will pay respect to Triple Gem, then we end the pre-puja. Buddhang pucemi, Dhammang pucemi, Sanghang pucemi. Okay. Now you can be seated. Good. We will now have our meditation session. It will be a 30-minute meditation. You can start your meditation immediately. For those who already know how to meditate, you straight away can start. For those who are new, who still need to train your mind, you train. To meditate is very simple. You must have the spiritual faculty, then your mind will not have problem. Then it can just relax body and mind, silent, and the meditation will go on its own, very simple. But for those who need to train your mind, you can train. You can use any skillful means. You can start off with mind sweeping method if you want to, if you still got a lot of mental hindrance or heedless thinking. Then this mind-sweeping method can help you to calm yourself down, to decondition the heedless thinking. Then from there, never mind, I will do it. okay. It's okay. Never mind, leave it. Thank you. Once you have this ability to decondition the heedless thinking, your mind will become very quiet, very peaceful, because you only feel and you relax, you don't think anymore. So mind sweeping method, if you combine with loving kindness or metta, it will be very useful and very easy to meditate. Hi. Off this one. Thank you. Then after that, when the mind is quiet and peaceful, you're supposed to stabilize it. Those who use all your meditation object or method and technique, this is actually your skillful means to develop the stability of that silence or mindfulness. So if you anchor it to your object of meditation, your mind will develop mindfulness without thinking, without thought. the moment it is aware, mindful, without thought, you will develop the various mind state that will help you to meditate. The first thing that you will experience is piti, spiritual rupture or spiritual calmness. Once piti arises, you have to relax into it, continue to silent, continue to develop that mindfulness. Then when piti transforms into something more refined, you can experience sukha. Sukha is a type of mind that is very blissful. They call it spiritual bliss. The mind becomes very still and very quiet, but there's a lot of joy, extreme bliss within. Then you continue to relax and silence further. Even this sukha will fade away. Then your mind becomes very quiet, very still, very tranquil. It stabilizes into pasati. Pasati is the silent mind. Pasati is the meditative mind. Pasati is the inner awareness, very near to your true mind. So you just silence everything and stay there. Yeah. You can maintain your awareness at the object of meditation that you are familiar with. Then after a while, if your object of meditation becomes so subtle until you cannot detect or hardly can detect, then you don't worry. You don't go and do anything. You just silence everything and maintain silence. As you become more and more quiet, more and more peaceful, and more silent, this pasati will stabilize. It will develop into sati, which is the mind that is already in the state of sati or awareness. It is just aware, nothing else. That is your true mind. So all of meditation is to develop the training of the mind to be aware, to be quiet, to be still. Then from there, you will understand a lot of things. The meditation will move by itself. Then you will understand clearly how you function as a human being, how sense or consciousness come to be upon contact of mind with the senses, then how your mundane mind, through delusion, wrong view, self-delusion, sakkayadity, grabs, cling, react and stir, creating all the hindrance, creating all the mind state that brings about the lack of peace. So you can silence your mind to continue to be aware of all this movement. You will develop wisdom so that finally you will understand them very clearly. You will see their universal characteristic. You will not be deluded by them anymore. You will come to understand clearly what they are. Like the Buddha said, mind make a day. Mind is the forerunner of all things. When mind arises, everything come to be. When mind cease, everything cease to be. So the whole of meditation is very simple when you understand. Okay, I will leave it to you all to develop the meditation. I will ring the bell after about 20 minutes. Those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who are now slowly, mindfully come out of meditation, then we will proceed with our invocation to the devas. Turn to page 6 of the chanting book. I will read to you all the English translation. Then after that, I will chant the Pali. Then together, we shall chant the Vandana onwards. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities and devas come here. Let them hear the good doctrine of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and releases Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. Samanta Chakavalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Saddhammang Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sakamokkadang Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Bandata Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Bandata Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Bandata Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Iti peso bhagava arahang sama sambuddho Vija charana sampanno sugato lokavidu Anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati Satta deva manusanang Buddho Bhagavati Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehi Pasiko Opanayiko Pachatang Veditabo Vinohiti Supatipanno bhagavato savakasango Ujupatipanno bhagavato savakasango Nyayapatipanno bhagavato savakasango Samichi patipanno bhagavato savaka sango Yadidang chattari purisa yukkani Ata purisa pugala Esa bhagavato savaka sango Ahuneyo, pahuneyo, dakineyo, anjallikaraniyo, anuttarang punyang ketang lokasati. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we will pay respect to Triple Gem. Huh? Buddhang Pajami. Dhammang Pajami. Sanghang Pajami. Okay. Just relax yourself, huh? Then maintain some form of attention. Then we will continue with our Diamond Sutta class. There is also a piece of J. Krishnamurti quote in front of you. Huh? There are two very important J. Krishnamurti quotes. These are the two quotes that can allow you to understand clearly what mindfulness is all about, what awareness is all about. A lot of cultivators, especially Buddhists, they fail to understand this sati or mindfulness, or what J. Krishnamurti call awareness. And because of that, they fail to understand the essential Dhamma that the Buddha taught, especially the cultivation of the four foundations of mindfulness, satipatthana. Because sati is not clearly understood, so it's very difficult to understand the sutta. It's very difficult to penetrate the sutta. And without a clear understanding, you cannot cultivate. So because of that, we are going to go through these two very important J. Krishnamurti quote. I will go through later. Now we will turn to the first page where we will recite the opening verse for the sutta. Okay, together we shall recite the verse for opening a sutta. The unsurpassed, profound, and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning. Yeah. So for those who don't have the book, because you are new, it's okay. Yeah? I will read to you all so that you all can follow. Okay. We stop at page 39 there. We finish 38. We finish 38 in there. We are at page 39. We finish the part on how should we dwell. This was the question posed by Venerable Subhati. And the answer given by the Buddha is very important. When Subhati asked the Buddha, if someone resolved his mind on Anuttara Sambut, Samyat Sambuhi, means when they resolve to cultivate the Bodhisattva way to become Sammasambuddha, how should he dwell? Which means, how can he eternally dwell in his true mind? Then how should he subdue his mind? How can he tame all of false thinking, vain thought? How can he subdue his greed? How can he tame his anger, enmity, jealousy, hatred? How can he overcome his stupidity or self-delusion, sakkayadity, and ignorance? That is what is meant by subducing his mind. The evil heart must be conquered, just as one were fighting to win a war. So like I explained that day, the word subduce is not so appropriate. You don't try to subdue or control or suppress. You cultivate understanding, which is wisdom. The moment the form and mind understand, you don't have to do anything. You will not be deluded anymore. You will not grasp, you will not hold, you will not cling. There will be no more problem. So there is no need to control or subdue. Then that dwelling, how should one dwell? If you remember the Heart Sutta, and the other one is the Platform Sutta, Liu Chu Tan Jing. It is also within the Diamond Sutta. Before Hui Ning went and meet up with the fifth patriarch, he heard the stanza, "The mind must have no dwelling," and he awakened to the way. So how should he dwell? The question is actually not so correct and precise, because the mind must have no dwelling. But because that true mind, the self nature or the Buddha nature, that is the nature that one need to be aware of. And when you can be aware of that, that's why Xuanhua used the word, how can he eternally dwell in the true mind? Means your nature has manifest and the mundane mind has collapsed, and you can be with that true nature or true mind all the time. It's no longer like before. So this is where the difference is. Then after that, we move on. Then the question is, how does one conquer or overcome greed, hatred, and delusion, which are the three evil roots? Then Xianhua just mentioned the standard answer. He said, we counter them with sila, samadhi, and panya, or morality, concentration, and wisdom. So greed, hatred, and delusion, they can be overcome by the opposite three of sila, samadhi, and panya. So basically, as we all have gone through the essential Dhamma, sila, samadhi, and panya is actually the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Because within the Noble Eightfold Path, you got the three division. The division of sila, which is precept. Then the division of samadhi, which is samasati and samasamadhi. Then you have the division of wisdom, which is the right view or right understanding. So this one, you need to develop understanding. Then Xianhua said, it's a matter of how one uses them. For example, one can use money. That one we have gone through, not important. Yeah. But the actual rooting out of defilement is wisdom, nothing else. Of course, you need to cultivate the mind, train the mind until it's ever mindful, heedful. Not until you can be heedful in the midst of daily life, you cannot develop the understanding of the mind. And if the mind is not understood, you will not understand who you are, what you are, and how you function as a human being, and how this mundane mind continue to delude you, stir your mind, continue to create delusion in you. And because of that, suffering will continue to arise. So living beings are caught in this cycle of birth and death or samsara. It's because of delusion, self-delusion, sakkayaditti, the main one. The other one is ignorance of the Noble Truth, ignorance of all the great laws of nature that governs all of life and existence. So that is the more important aspect of the cultivation. That's why when you go into Noble Eightfold Path, Sila, Samadhi, and Panya, the first path factor is right view. Right view has very deep meaning. Right view with regards to all the nature's law, the five universal order that governs life and existence. The Buddha called it Pancha Niyamas. Pancha Niyamas, there are five. The first two are scientific law. Uttu Niyama and Bija Niyama. They are the great physical law of nature and the biological law of nature. So the scientists, because they are able to break free and understand these two laws, that's why nowadays we progress very fast. Scientifically, humanity has progressed quite fast. The last 30 to 40 years of progress is so much faster than the last recorded 5,000 years. And our planet, if you check with the scientists, they can tell you it is actually about 10 billion years. And over this period of 10 billion years, only the last 30, 40 years, our civilization has progressed. And all this is possible because of scientists' ability to unfold these two great laws of nature, physical law and biological law, Uttu Niyama and Bija Niyama. So likewise, the Buddha, Sammasambuddha Sakyamuni, he was able to penetrate the spiritual field. We are understanding the next three laws. The law of karma, karma niyama. The law of mind, chitta niyama. And the law of truth, nature's truth, dhamma niyama. These are the three great spiritual laws that governs the rest of nature. And because the Buddha is an expert in this, he is the fully enlightened one. He has perfected all the understanding of these three great laws. That's why he is called the Sammasambuddha, fully enlightened one. So first right view, Sammaditti, is to have this clear understanding of these three laws. The law of karma, karma niyama, the law of mind, chitta niyama, and the law of truth, dhamma niyama. When you have this understanding, you will understand his teaching. You will understand life. You will know how to live life. You will understand who you are, what you are, and all of nature's phenomena. Their universal characteristics are impermanent, leading to suffering and their empty nature and non-self nature. All this you will penetrate. The first law of karma, according to the Buddha, within the five daily contemplation that he asked the monk at the time to contemplate, the fifth one, he said, all living beings in this universe, regardless of whether you are a human or non-human, even animals, you are all born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma, and you are what you are because of your karma. So if you understand this law, and you know that law of karma is so powerful, each and every living being, we are born of it, heir to it, conditioned and supported by it. And we are what we are every moment, every instant because of it. So you will have the right understanding or right view to take care of karma. Because karma plays such a great role in our life. And the whole of the teaching that the Buddha taught us, or the living being at that time, especially the monks, they are centered on this first right view. That's why in the puja, we are told to take refuge. We are told to renew our precepts. We are told to develop dana parami, make offering, cultivate generosity, wholesomeness, and all these things. All this come from understanding this law of karma. To take care of karma, the Buddha said, you have to understand that this nature's law of karma, they are fundamental laws involving our mind, mental intention. That's why the Buddha defined karma as chitena. It is chitena, or mental intention, that I call karma, the Buddha said. So chitena, or mental intention is the basis of karmic activity. So the Buddha said under Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, if you act, speak, and think with a heedless mind that has the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, means your mental intention has these evil roots, then suffering will follow you, just like the wheel that follows the hoof of the cart. Then the opposite twin verse, Dhammapada verse 2. Again, the Buddha say, our mind is the forerunner of all things, mind is chief. When mind arises, everything arises. So if you don't train your mind, if you don't develop heedfulness to see your mental intention, then you will fall. Then your karma will fall. But if you understand the importance of mind, you determine to train this mind and develop the heedfulness to be aware of your mental intention behind all your action, speech, and thought process, then you will act, speak, and think with a wholesome mind, free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Then such a mind, happiness will follow them like the shadow that never leaves them. And this is how, if you want to have happiness, if you want to have the good life, you must train your mind to be ever mindful of your mental intention, so that you can arise the appropriate right effort to abandon the unwholesome thought, the unwholesome action, speech, and livelihood that you have arisen. Then the second right effort is to prevent all this wrong action, speech, and thought process from arising. Then the third right effort is to cultivate all of the right thought, right speech, right action, the wholesome virtue, so that you take care of karma, so that you will not fall. Then the last right effort is to refine upon all this that you have developed and cultivated, so that you can perfect them until you are incapable of negativity. Then the Buddha said, law of karma is very simple. You reap what you sow. Do good begets good. Do evil begets evil. If you plant the seeds of evil, evil will befall you. If you plant the seed of wholesomeness and goodness, goodness will be rewarded to you. So because of that, the Buddha said, in order to take care of karma, you have to follow his advice. His advice is the famous Dhammapada verse 183. He said, sabba papasa akaranam kusalesa upasambadan sacitta pariyottapanam etang buddhana sasana. This is in Pali. The English translation, he said, sabba is all, papasa is evil. All evil you have to avoid. Then whatever wholesomeness, goodness, kusalesa, you have to cultivate. And the last one is, after avoiding all evil, cultivate wholesomeness and goodness, you have to purify your mind. Sacitta pariyottapanam. This is the advice of all Buddha. The reason why we do this is because in order to take care of karma, we have to avoid all evil. Then in order to develop wisdom, not to be afflicted, not to have any more suffering, we are delusion, we need to purify this mind. That's why the advice of the Buddha comes from this right view with regards to law of karma. Then the Buddha explained, how do we take care of karma? How do we avoid all evil? He recommended the precepts. He said the five precepts is the minimum you have to keep. The reason being, if you analyze the precept, each and every one of them, who are the people who violate all these precepts? Break all these precepts. Take for example the first precept, pranatipata virabhani sikha padang samadhiyami, which we chant just now when we renew our precept. The meaning is, we undertake the training rule to abstain from killing and harming fellow living beings. What type of person will kill and harm? What type of person will do this? Kill and harm. An evil person, a selfish person, emotionally violent or negative person. So you realize that three evils of greed, hatred, and delusion are there. Then they violate this precept. So people who violate all this precept, they are evil people. That's why when you commit evil things, we are the evil roots. They are the roots of all evil. That's why the Buddha called it the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. You must not have them in the heart. Greed, the meaning is very deep. All of your selfishness is greed. All of your desire, your craving, your lustfulness, they are also greed. All of your light, they are also greed. Then your deceitfulness, your cunningness, they are all selfish intention behind. So this constitute greed. Similarly, anger or hatred, they are not limited to only anger and hatred. The evil roots of hatred covers many other things. All of your envy and jealousy, they are part of this evil root of hatred. Then all of your whatever dislike, unhappiness, sorrow, they are part of this evil root. Then further down, the third evil root, which is Sakkayaditti or self-delusion. All of your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your unhappiness, your sorrow and your lamentation, your insecurities, these are all the evil roots of self-delusion, Sakkayaditti, because you think there's a person inside there to be fearful, to be unhappy, to be insecure, to arise the restlessness of mind. That's why the fear, worry, and anxiety come about, and it makes the mind restless. And these are all the evil roots, and also part of the five mental hindrances. So when you understand all this teaching, then you come to understand the very important first power factor of right view. Just the law of karma alone is so powerful, and the whole of his teaching come about. Then we move on to the second right view. Right view with regards to the law of mind, citta niyama. This one, the Buddha said, the most important law is the law of dependent origination, the dwelling, paticca samuppada. In Mandarin, it's called si yin yan fa, yan qi yan mie, dependent originating. He said there is no being inside there. He know you, he know me. This is how you function as a human being. There is a consciousness with its content. There is the mind, the mundane mind, the thinking mind. And this is the one that continuously proliferate, stir, dilute you, condition you to grasp and cling and give rise to all the suffering. That's why the first noble truth, final summary, the Buddha summarizes it in short. It is due to living beings' delusion, that condition, self-delusion, that condition them to grasp and cling onto the five aggregate of form and mind. The first aspect is as a human being or a living being. Then the second aspect is the five mental aggregates of form and mind. When you deludedly grasp and cling, suffering will arise. That's why he said, upadana kandas, the five aggregates of grasping or clinging, they are suffering. So all this you will understand when you penetrate this law of dependent origination. He said, because of your ignorant, avijja, paccaya sankhara, dependent or ignorant activity of mind comes to be, sankhara come to be. That's why you think a lot, you become heedless. Then when you think, you make contact with the mind, and the mind is an organ. So the Buddha said when you make contact with the guy, the mind, it's like the physics experiment. Upon contact with the switch, the light bulb lights up. So consciousness will arise, mental consciousness. That's why avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijñānaṁ, which is the mental consciousness. Then through your delusion, your wrong view, you input a content. it become the five aggregate of form and mind, nama rupang. Yeah. Then dependent on this five aggregate of form and mind, yeah, it will condition the next link. Yeah. So all this is what the dependent origination is all about. There is no being inside there. There is no person inside there. Yeah. So dependent on this five aggregate of form and mind, there must be the six sense basis, salayatana. And dependent on salayatana, which is the sense basis, there will be contact, because mind has to make contact for consciousness to arise, for the content to go in. So upon contact, feeling will also arise. Where feeling is one of the seven universal, then because you lack wisdom, feeling will condition craving. Craving will condition grasping. Grasping will condition becoming. Yeah. Then you take birth, then arise the whole mess of suffering. So this is what the dependent origination is all about. Then when it comes to the third right view, Dhamma Niyama, the Buddha said the most powerful Dhamma is the Four Noble Truth. That's why you need to cultivate this Four Noble Truth. And this Four Noble Truth is like the secret of life. The Buddha was able to summarize all of life into just four simple truths, but they are called noble truths. Because these are truths, when you understand, you become noble ones. And noble ones are called enlightened ones. That's why it's called Arya Satya, noble truth. Aryas are enlightened ones, noble ones. So when you understand this four noble truths, you will understand the secret of life. Because the first noble truth will reveal to you the realities of life and existence, the eight conditions that the Buddha mentioned, the first noble truth reality. Any living being who live long enough, they will confront this eight reality. And when you confront them without wisdom, the Buddha says, suffering will arise. So that is the first noble truth. Noble truth of suffering. And the eight reality we have gone through, birth, old age, sickness and death, separation from loved ones, and prized possession or whatever you hold on to, cling on to and grasp on to. Then the sixth condition is when you are with people whom you don't like. The seventh one is when you cannot get what you want, when things don't go your way, when your expectations in life are not met. When you want things your way, you suffer. And the last one is of course the final summary. Upadana Kandas. So these eight conditions, the Buddha said, they are the realities of life and existence. And everything within the mundane existence is within this reality. Yeah. So the Buddha said, when you understand this first noble truth, you have to be serious about life, because it explained to you the prevalence of suffering. Suffering is everywhere, because you have to confront them. And when you confront them without wisdom, suffering will arise, affliction will arise. Then the Buddha moved on to the second noble truth. He said, all of this suffering, when they arise, there is a cause behind. And the cause is mainly due to your self-delusion, sakayatiti, that condition you to grasp, cling and hold. That's why craving is the cause of suffering. And when you understand this, you will know how to manage your life better. When you understand what suffering is and the cause behind, you will not be deluded by it anymore. You will know how to attentively understand it and deal with it. Then the Buddha didn't stop there. He moved on and explained clearly the third noble truth. He said, suffering need not be in this world. Enlightenment in the here and the now, Nibbana, can be realized. And this is the most powerful teaching. It not only gives you hope, it explains to you clearly that enlightenment in the here and the now, before you die, is possible. And when you have this enlightenment, this understanding of his teaching, you need not suffer anymore. You can live the life of a noble one and enlighten me. And that is the reward of your hard work. That is the third phase of Dhamma Pativeda. Then he continued to move on. He explained, he said, not only enlightenment is possible, he even explained to you the fourth noble truth. He said, there is a way out of suffering. If you cultivate this noble eightfold path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. That's why noble eightfold path is the meditation. And within the noble eightfold path, we have the four foundation of mindfulness. That's why that is the only way. Kekayano bhikkhave bhikkhu, the Buddha said. O bhikkhu, this is the only way for the purification of being, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, for reaching the right path, for the realization of Nibbana, which is the enlightenment in the here and the now, namely the Noble Eightfold Path. So the teaching is very clear. And when you understand this, you will know how to cultivate. So this is the real explanation. But if you look at what Xuanhua has mentioned in the commentary, he just mentioned Sila Samadhi Panya. If you don't know how to link to Noble Eightfold Path, you cannot understand. Then it is so brief. That's why it's very difficult to understand. Okay? This is what I want you all to develop as understanding. Then with this, maybe we will go on to Krishnamurti code. So we will go on to Krishnamurti code. Okay. Turn to the sheet. There are two quotes. The first one is The Grief of Self-Centered Sorrow by J. Krishnamurti. Then the second quote is You cannot be totally aware if you are choosing. Then there are some notes down there. Under the first J. Krishnamurti quote, I put there J. Krishnamurti used the word deep thoughtlessness. Deep thoughtlessness here means deep heedlessness. When you are thoughtless means you are not mindful, you are not heedful. That's why it's deep heedlessness. Then thoughtful and watchful means you are heedful and mindful. Then down there, the last line, the definition of awareness or sati or mindfulness is very important. Awareness or sati or mindfulness is the silent, choiceless observation of what is. Krishnamurti defined awareness as this, and the Buddha's meaning of sati and mindfulness, which is our English translation, is also the same, except most people don't understand. So he used the word silent, choiceless observation of what is. What is the truth, the reality, suchness, tasness of thing. Silent means not only without words, without verbalization, even your inner chattering of your mind, that one also ceases. That's like completely silent, not only verbally silent, mentally also silent. If you are not silent, you cannot be aware. I have already explained it. If you are not silent means what? You are thinking. You are lost in thought. When you are thinking and lost in thought, what are you doing? You are preoccupied with what you think, with your emotion, with all those things that are involved in that thinking, the whole of the process. So when you do that, you cannot be aware anymore, because man can only do one thing at a time. Either you are aware with the moment in silence to understand the truth and the reality, to see things as they are, or you are lost in thought, thinking, worrying, planning, doing all the funny things in life. That is what the Buddha meant by heedlessness. And the Buddha very clearly explained under Dhammapada verse 21, the heedless is as if dead, and heedlessness is the path to the dead. So it is very dangerous to be heedless. The moment you are heedless, spiritually you are as if dead. Then he said, heedfulness is the path to the deathless, the heedful never die. So exactly the same way Krishnamurti also explained it. He said under the first verse, the last line, The thoughtful, the watchful are free from sorrow. That's why no more suffering. And you are destined for enlightenment. Then choiceless observation means you don't judge, you don't choose, you don't react, you don't stir your mind. When you observe, you're silent and you observe with awareness. And that is the deep. When you are busy commenting, reacting, being conditioned your mind, you like to react and stir your mind. And when you do that, you are not listening, you are not seeing, you are not observing, you are lost in thought, you have become heedless. So this part is very important. Now I go into the code, then you will understand. The first code, the grief of self-centered sorrow. You know what is grief, huh? Grief is suffering. When you cling on to your suffering, you become very sorrowful. Then there's a lot of grief. All this suffering, born of self-centered sorrow. Self-centered means self-delusion, sakkayaditti. You think this human being is what you are. You think you have a physical body. You think you have a mind. You think you are this so-called human being or living being. You are being called certain name, and you hold on to your identity as a man, as a male, as a Chinese, as a Buddhist, or whatever religious label. So this is self-delusion, and it brings about sorrow. That's why Krishnamurti say, the grief of self-centered sorrow. We go into the code now. He said, how little attention we pay to things about ourselves, to observe and to consider. Living beings seldom do that. You understand, you check your life throughout the day, what are you doing? You are not mindful of what is going on, and you are hardly aware of who you are, what you are. Most of the time you are busy thinking, planning, worrying, commenting and reacting to life. So much so you never leave. Because you think a lot. And you are hardly with the moment in awareness. Your thought proliferate with great speed ahead of what you do. Then as you think, you continue to create more and more of this heedlessness. We read on, then you understand. We are so self-centered, so occupied with our worries, with our own benefits. We have no time to observe and understand. True or not? You agree or not? What he says is very true. You are so self-centered, means what? Your self-delusion. You are only conscious of yourself, understand not? Everything you do or your thought process, for me or not for me, understand not? Then the entity is so strong, no? I see, I hear, I smell, I taste, I think, therefore I am. Then my loved one, my wealth, my career, my possession, my house, my property, my wife, my children, my grandchildren. So all this is all self-centered activity. And you are so engrossed with all this self-centered activity, thinking. So much so you're hardly aware of the surrounding, of what is going on, of who you are, what you are, and how you function as a human being. What makes you this way? How come for no reason, all of a sudden, your mind can stir and become very unhappy, or angry, or fearful, or miserable? You never find out, because you are hardly aware. You just get yourself entangled, and this is what suffering is all about. So Krishnamurti said, we are so self-centered, so occupied with our worries. Here you can add in the word fear, worry, and anxiety. That's why your mind becomes restless. When you have fear, worry, and anxiety, you become very restless. And fear, worry, and anxiety arise because you attach and cling to your own body and mind. When you attach to this body, you worry about it getting old, getting sick and die. That's why that one brings about a lot of worry, anxiety. Then it leads to restlessness of mind. It leads to fear, worry, anxiety. Then the thought project. Then when it attaches to all the things that the mind tell them, your loved ones, your career, your reputation, your wealth, everything that you think you own, your possession, your car, your house, you worry about them. Even your own body, you worry about it. Getting sick, getting old, and one day die. Even your loved ones on too. So this is how suffering comes about. Then you also preoccupied with your self, own benefit, your selfishness. You try to strive on so hard just to earn a living. Then at the expense of your health, your family time, your life, you never get to live. You work for money, then you use money to pay for your health, to buy back your health, and you never see all this. But when you work with understanding, you don't have to work at the expense of your health. You work with understanding and joy. Then you have wisdom, you have understanding, and you will not get yourself entangled. So all these are wisdom that can bring forth the understanding to liberate your mind. Then Krishnamurti continue by saying, we have no time to observe and understand. Means you never observe yourself. You never understand yourself. If you cannot understand yourself, you cannot understand others, your loved one, your colleague, your friend, your all the other people that you have relationship with. This occupation makes your mind dull and weary. See? This is how you become very dull and very weary. That's why they say, this type of life is not worth living, especially people with problems. They think and think until they become depressed. Then they enter depression. Then the thought that arises is suicidal. Might as well die. That's why they become very, very dull, then frustrated, sorrowful. Their mind become dull and weary. And from sorrow, they want to escape. See? After you have get yourself entangled with all the sorrow, the lamentation, the unhappiness, the frustration and all those things, then you want to escape. Escape through what? Through your cunningness. Through your deceitfulness. Again, through your wrong view. Then it makes you so emotional, so violent, so angry, so full of hatred. That's how you live. You retaliate. And you create a mess out of the whole thing. And nature's law take over law of karma. You reap what you sow. Whatever anger, hatred, and delusion that you arise through the evil root, they will make you evil. They will cause your karmic nature to fall. Then when the condition arises, you reap what you sow. You become the victim. And you get afflicted back. So this is the nature's law. It will hit back. So Krishnamurti says, as long as the self is active, the next line, there must be very dullness and frustration. See? Same as the Buddha's teaching. The final summary. Self-delusion is the cause of suffering. So as long as the self is active, suffering will continue. Yeah? There must be very dullness and frustration. People are caught in the mad race, in the grief of self-centered sorrow. This sorrow is deep thoughtlessness. That's why I put the meaning down there, heedlessness. The thoughtful, the watchful are free from sorrow. When you have mindfulness, awareness, heedfulness, to understand all this, to insight into their characteristics of nature, their impermanent nature, suffering state and non-self or empty nature, then you awaken. You liberate your mind. You're no longer deluded by what the thought tell you, by what the mind tell you, by your conditioning, by your wrong view. Then you can retrospectively reverse all this. Then you can free the mind. The mind that is free, the mind that is liberated, will have no more sorrow. Can follow that? Huh? Can understand the Quran? Quiet means what? Huh? If you cannot understand, especially the new one, you put up your hand. Huh? Then maybe I can explain again. Can you all follow? Oh, good. Oh, sadhu. Can follow, huh? Oh, very good. Not bad. What about the other two? Can follow, huh? Wow, sadhu, very good. You all heard of Krishnamurti before? Jay Krishnamurti, heaven. You heard of him before? This person? The note is good enough to understand. Very good. From the note. So you don't need to know the author. Very good, sadhu. He is a very wise person. He is not a Buddhist. He don't believe in having a religious label. He only teach the truth. That's why he is very unique. He dismantled the whole of the Krishnamurti Foundation that people set up for him. So when you start to understand him, you will know why he do that. Because he said religion should have no authority. The moment religion has authority, it ceased to be a religion. He is a very wise person. He wants to free all living beings. He don't want you all to be trapped by your own conditioning and by any authority. Authority means a person with authority acting as the head of that religion. Just like the Buddha, he said, even though he is a Sammasambuddha, he said, you don't have to believe me. So he don't believe in authority too, just like Krishnamurti. He said, I am like you, just a human being. But because of the aeons and aeons of cultivation, this nature has developed this clear understanding of the teaching, the Buddha Dhamma, and he has awakened to it. And because of that, he is able to proclaim this to the world. Teach this to the world. So when he do that, he said to the Kalamas, you don't have to believe what I said, because this teaching is very unique. He said, this Dhamma, you can put it to investigation, because it is the truth. It will stand up to investigation. That's why it's ahipassiko. And this Dhamma can be realized in the here and the now. That's why it's sanditiko. Yeah. Then he said, this Dhamma is beyond thought, beyond mind. That's why it's akaliko. So the characteristic of this Dhamma, which is the truth, the Buddha explained to you very clearly. And he said, you don't have to believe what he said. You just have to spend time to investigate into what he said. If it's the truth, then use it. And it's given free. So this first quote is already very, very meaningful. Now we move on to the next one. You cannot be totally aware if you are choosing. This one is a more in-depth description of how you cultivate awareness or mindfulness. Krishnamurti said, awareness or mindfulness isn't something mysterious that you must practice. This is where a lot of cultivators go wrong. Oh, the whiteboard is occupied. Never mind. You see, Krishnamurti says sati, or awareness, or mindfulness, cannot be practiced. You agree or not? Do you agree? This is very important though. Do you agree or not? All the meditation center teach you what? Practice mindfulness. How do you practice? Most of them use thought-based meditation. They teach you how to note. Understand not? Note this, note that. Do this, do that. He said, by doing all these things, or follow the breath, note the rising and falling, or do all this type of meditation, the method and the technique, then it will bring about enlightenment. Then when it comes to sati, or mindfulness, or awareness, they seldom explain to you what is it. They just tell you, be mindful. Then a lot of this teaching, they say, all the noting you do when you slow down your action, you are doing mindfulness. You have to be careful. You have to find out and investigate. Because to Krishnamurti, is very clear. To be aware is very simple. Just like the Buddha, he said, standing, aware. Walking, aware. Lying down, aware. Sitting, aware. Is it so difficult? He never says standing, not standing, standing, standing. He never say that. That's why aware means what? The moment you are attentive and silent, you're already aware. When this body is in the standing position, the mind and the body as one, attentive, it is already aware. Attentive in the awareness, it is already aware. It's not thinking. The moment you are silent, you are already aware. So it's not something that you must practice. Understand? Who practice? The thought want to practice. Understand? The thought who don't understand keep on practicing. That's why when you meditate, who is meditating? If you are not able to train your mind to be silent, the thought is actively meditating. And that is not meditation. Oh, good. Okay, listen again. As long as the thought is active, the thought is the meditator. Can follow that? Where the thought is noting, the thought is doing, a lot of doing. So when this thought is active, how can you be aware? That's why Krishnamurti say, wherever there is a meditator, there is no meditation. Because there is no one inside there to meditate. The moment you are silent, you are already aware. If you don't chatter, you don't talk, or you don't verbalize inside, when you are silent, attentively silent and aware, you understand what is going on. But the moment you are preoccupied with your chattering, your verbalization, your thinking, your concept and the idea that you create through your conditioning, your views and your opinion, you are not listening at all. You are not meditating at all. You cannot understand. Because you are acting according to your conditioning, according to your memory. And what is memory? Our whole of memory is what? The brain. It's the accumulation of our experiences. True or not? True or not? Yeah. And what are the experiences that you accumulate? Your happy and your unhappy past. Agree or not? All of your experience of life, you accumulate. And you deposit them as your memory. Then within this memory, you have your fear, your phobia, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow, your lamentation. Sometimes you even witness how you cheat people and how people cheat you. So your insecurity, your fear, your phobia, all this negativity, then even your happy moment, they are all deposited there. Then when you act according to this memory, what happened? Krishnamurti say you are not acting at all. Because you are acting according to your conditioning of mind, your views, your opinion, your selfishness, your fear, your phobia, your insecurity. So out of this, you act. That's why all these are evil roots. Selfishness, greed, hatred and delusion, your fear, your phobia. This is not the way to act. That's why the Buddha said you must act with wisdom, understanding. You don't act according to memory. acting according to memory is not acting at all. You must act according to Noble Eightfold Path. You must have right view, right understanding. That's why act according to wisdom, understanding. You don't act according to your delusion. That's why acting according to memory is not acting at all. So the moment the thought is active is from the memory, because thought is respond to memory, understand not? When you see something, hear something, or recall something, it comes from what? Memory. When you see without memory, you cannot perceive. True or not? When you hear without memory, you cannot understand what you hear. Then when you recall, you have to recall through memory. That's why thought is respond to memory. Then Krishnamurti asks a very good question. Is there a thinker behind the thought? We believe we exist there. Then for us to think, there must be a thinker behind the thought, isn't it? Very logical, isn't it? You go and meditate. When you silence your mind, you find out, and then you tell me whether there is a thinker behind the thought or not. You will get a shock of your life. He know you, he know me. There is no thinker within. It's like the physics experiment, the light bulb, the switch, and the battery. Upon contact, the light bulb just light up. Because these are your senses, five physical senses and the mind. Upon contact with mind, it's just like the light bulb. It lights up. You become conscious. Conscious of what you see, conscious of what you hear, smell, taste, tactile feel, and think. And like the Buddha said, in the seeing, it's only the seeing consciousness, no one to see. In the hearing, it's only the hearing consciousness, no one to hear. It's just this consciousness that arises, like the physics experiment, the light bulb lights up. The mind becomes conscious of what it see, what it hear, what it smell, what it tactile feel, taste, and think. And that is just natural, dependent origination. That's why the dependent origination, the dwelling, the paticca-samuppada, that is how your mind functions. So when you understand that, when you're silent, when you see it clearly in your meditation, you awaken, you're no longer deluded by it. Then you realize there is no being inside there. Then you analyze the five aggregate of form and mind. The physical body without consciousness is only element, cannot be you. True or not? Yeah? Your physical body. There is no knowing there. It cannot be you there. That's why after the consciousness separate, the doctor cut, do autopsy, no feeling in there. You don't feel anything in there. That's why the body is never you. But living being cannot understand. They cling. They worry about it getting old, getting sick and die. Then when it comes to the consciousness, the Buddha say, our consciousness, there are four more aggregates. Our consciousness, which is the mind, what can it do? It can feel. That's why there is a feeling aggregate. It can perceive. It can know the world through its perception. From what it sees, the seeing consciousness, the color, shape, and form, it can perceive them. My voice that I speak through your hearing, you can perceive them. So perception is the second aggregate power of mind. That's why under the teaching, he said our human being is the five aggregate of form and mind. First aggregate is the physical body, which is the physical form. Then the second aggregate, which is mental, he said, is your feeling. Then the third aggregate is your perception, because you are capable of perceiving things through your senses. Then the third aggregate is throughout the day you do a lot. Yeah? You think a lot, isn't it? You are capable of a lot of mental activity, thinking, mental states. That's why you do a lot of this sankhara activity throughout the day. That's how living beings become heedless. So all of your mental intention, mental thinking, mental state, mental emotion, all of your planning and scheming, these are part of sankhara. Everything that your mind can do, the activity that goes on within, that is what sankhara is about. So the third aggregate is sankhara. That's why the Buddha used this word a lot, sabbe sankhara anicchang. All of sankhara is impermanent, they come and they go. And all of sankhara leads to suffering, sabbe sankhara dukkhang. Then all of dhamma is anatta, sabbe dhamma anatta, empty nature, non-self. So all this, they are very clearly explained in the teaching. And the last aspect of the mind is, the Buddha said, your mind has another quality. It can become conscious. So consciousness is the fourth aggregate, vijnanam. You can be conscious of what you see through your seeing consciousness. You can be conscious of what you hear through your hearing consciousness. You can be conscious of what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. So this is the fourth aggregate, consciousness. So the Buddha said, if you were to deludedly grasp and cling to these four aggregates, suffering will arise. And according to the Buddha, these four aggregates of mind, they are also impermanent. They are also non-self. The moment you grasp and cling deludedly, thinking is you, suffering will arise. When you think the feeling is you, suffering will arise. When you think everything that you come to perceive is real, is you, belong to you, suffering will arise. When you grasp and cling to all your views and opinions created by your thinking and your thought process, suffering arise. When you attach and cling to everything that you become conscious of, the phenomenal world of consciousness, suffering arise. You don't believe, you can investigate into it. You can find out for yourself. Then the other thing is, in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, the Sutta on non-self, the Buddha make it very clear. But through my own contemplation, I developed another more effective way of penetrating that non-self, Anatta nature. We look at feeling. Is feeling self? You ask yourself, is feeling self? The feeling that you feel, that you become conscious of, like hot and cold, painful feeling, pleasant feeling, are they real? Are they you? What you think? Maybe we get somebody new, song's friend. What do you think? This feeling, is it you? Is it real? Yeah, you feel it, isn't it? Let's say painful feeling when it arises. Painful feeling. No, is it real to you? To you, is it real, this feeling? Is it real?
Painful.
Feeling when it arises. Let's say your leg become very painful after long sitting. Is that real to you? Oh, real to you, huh? Then does the feeling that arise belong to you? Is it you? Feeling. Is there a person who feel? Oh, yes. Okay, very good. Then now I ask you another question. Let's say now painful feeling. After that, you get up. This painful feeling is gone. Okay? No more painful because you don't bend your leg, you don't stress it. But you didn't see the other point. If that painful feeling is you, when it disappears, did you die? Did you die? You know that, but you say it's you. The feeling when it arises, just now, I ask you, is it real? You say yes. Is it your feeling? You say yes. So now I ask you another question. When this painful feeling disappears, another feeling arise, let's say pleasant feeling, because you no longer subject your leg to that state of restrictive, where the chi cannot flow. And let's say you know how to relax into it, then this painful feeling is gone. So the question is, if feeling is you, when that feeling, the painful feeling, pass away, like you say it's impermanent, come and go, when it pass away, if it's you, it should die, isn't it? feeling come and go, you still around. Agree or not? So which means you didn't die. So feeling is never you. You see the point or not? Now you understand, huh? Then I ask you a question. If feeling is not you, how come they arise in you? Perception also come and go, but you didn't die in it. Thinking also come and go, you didn't die in it. Consciousness also come and go, you didn't die in it. Then the question is, if it's not you, why did it arise in you? Then who are you? What are you? You understand that you were awakened. That is meditation. I know. Initially, not easy. Actually, for a first timer, you are already very good. Really, you are already very good. Even for you to follow until now, you are already very good. I rejoice. Salute to you. Means he cultivated before, but he is searching. There is condition for him to understand. We read on this quote, then you will understand better. Awareness isn't something mysterious that you must practice. It isn't something that you can learn only from the speaker or from some bearded gentleman or other. So now you understand. Don't think that only you can learn from teachers or master. No. Awareness is very simple. Sati is very simple. You only need to understand what it is. You look at the definition down there, you will know. It is the silent, choiceless observation of what is. Silent means what? As long as you don't verbalize, you don't chatter inside. Means verbally silent, mentally silent. That mind means no thought. Just aware. Choiceless means not choosing. No like, dislike. No judge. Understand not? You don't go and comment. Oh, this is wrong. This is right. It must be like that. When you are busy doing this, means you are acting out of your conditioning. You are not observing. You are not listening. The art of listening is you just listen, silent. But as you listen, you are commenting, interpreting, and doing all those reactive mind activity or stirring the mind, then what is happening? You are not listening at all. Because you are using your views, your opinion, your conditioning to compare to what is being spoken. The moment you do that, you are lost in thought, you have been heedless, you are preoccupied, and you cannot be attentive anymore. So to be aware is to be attentive. Like the Zen analogy, a cup of tea. If your cup is full, means what? You cannot take in anymore. Understand? Whatever that is poured into it will all flow out. Because you hold on to your views and opinion and your conditioning. You don't have an open mind to receive anything that is new. You cannot just silent and attentively listen. That's why the conditioned mind, the heedless mind that has the delusion, is incapable of understanding, is incapable of listening, is incapable of hearing. So all this, you will start to develop the understanding after you develop the appropriate meditation. After you have understood clearly who are you, what is this mind all about, what are the essential Dhamma that the Buddha has taught, then you will slowly, slowly straighten your view, develop the understanding. Then you will come to comprehend all this very clearly. Okay, we read on. All that kind of fanciful stuff is too absurd. Just to be aware, what does it mean? Now you pay attention. To be aware that you are sitting there and I am sitting here, that I am talking to you and you are listening to me. To be aware of this hall, its shape, its lighting, its acoustic. To observe the various color that people wear, their attitude, their effort to listen, their scratching, their yawning, their boredom, their dissatisfaction at being and not been able to get from what they hear something to carry home with them. Their agreement or disagreement with what is being said. All that is part of awareness, but it's a very superficial one. Understand? This is outward awareness. Very superficial. You haven't gone inside. That's why the true sati or the true mindfulness, the true awareness is to have this ability of consciousness to go in, to see. That's why seek within. Don't seek without. Truth is within. Your inner nature, your true nature. You have to realize it. It is the silent mind which is completely silent that is capable of understanding, capable of perceiving. Yeah. So I read on, then you can develop better understanding. Behind that superficial observation, there is the response from your conditioning. That one you have to be aware. How through your conditioning, yeah, like your belief system, your culture, as a Chinese, you have certain belief system, you have certain culture that you hold on to. Then your religious label will also condition you to have all those views and opinion of what things should be, what is truth and what is not truth and all those things. So he said, behind that superficial observation, there is this response of our conditioning, your like and your dislike. You call yourself a British, and you are not a British. Or you are a Catholic, and you are a Protestant. And our conditioning is really very deep. It requires a great deal of investigation and understanding to be conscious of our reaction, of our hidden motive, of our conditioned response. This also is part of awareness. But you cannot be totally aware if you are choosing. Means you are using your views and opinion and your conditioning to react. Understand not? Right and wrong, good or bad, should be or should not be. If you say that is right and that is wrong, the right and wrong depend on your conditioning. What is right to you may be wrong to the Far East. You believe in a Savior, in Christ, but they don't. And you think they will go to hell unless they believe as what you do. You have the means to build marvelous cathedrals. Well, they may worship a stone image, a tree, a bird, or a rock. And you said, how silly, how pagan. To be aware is to be conscious of all this choicelessly, means you don't command, you don't condemn, you don't react. To be aware is to be conscious of all this choicelessly. It is to be aware totally of all our conscious and subconscious reaction. And you cannot be aware totally if you are condemning, if you are justifying, or if you say, I will keep my belief, my experience, my knowledge. Then you are only partially aware. And partially aware is really blindness. See? He used such a strong word. You cannot be partially aware. Seeing or understanding is not a matter of time. It is not a matter of graduation. See? The same quote he used. Either you see or you don't see. You remember last night I used to share this with you. Truth is everywhere in the midst of life and nature. Why can't you see? Remember? Truth, the characteristic of nature, which is impermanent, suffering state, and non-self, is everywhere in the midst of life and nature. Why can't you see? And I always tell you what, those who see, they always see. Those who don't see, they never see. Exactly like what Krishnamurti said. So here he tell you the same thing. Either you see or you don't see. And you can't see if you are not deeply aware of your own reaction or your own conditioning. That's why the real seeing is what? Direct seeing. When you see things as they are without thought, that direct seeing is you don't comment, you don't react. It's just the silent awareness of it. That's why that silent, that true mind can awaken to phenomena. That's why I say let the phenomena tell you the story. Don't go and look for the phenomena. Who is looking for the phenomena? The thought. The thought is actively meditating. Oh, this is anicchang. This is impermanent. This is suffering. This is nonsense. All this is created by your own thought. That is not the real awakening. Not the real understanding. The real understanding is the Dhamma is beyond thought, beyond mind. When you are completely silent, just aware, then if the conditions are fulfilled, the nature will awaken to it. No thought, no word, nothing, no concept, no idea. It just understands. The moment it awakens, it understands, and that one is not rigid. That one is wisdom. That one penetrates the characteristics of impermanence, suffering state, and non-self. Within that moment, it awakens. Yeah. That is what the real meditation is all about. Okay? Yeah. Then we read on. Being aware of your conditioning, you must watch it choicelessly. So the key word is choicelessly. You must see the fact and not give an opinion or judgment about the fact. The fact is the reality. Means sitting as they are. In other words, you must look at the fact without thought. See? The word is without thought. Completely silent. Yeah. Then there is an awareness, a state of attention without a center. The center is the egoic mind. The center is the mundane mind that constantly become heedless. Yeah. Without frontier, where the known doesn't interfere. What is the known? Known is what? Memory. Understand? Yeah. Whatever that you know, you deposit as memory. So when the known is not there, means what? You are not using brain. Understand? You are just being aware. That's why this memory does not interfere. When memory interferes, there is fear. There is insecurity. There is like and dislike. There is the conditioned mind that is trying to make a choice, trying to comment, trying to judge, trying to condemn right and wrong and all these things. So this is what the teaching is all about. Without frontier, where the known doesn't interfere. So this is a very beautiful J. Krishnamurti quote. And hopefully with this, you can understand what mindfulness is. So next time, if you are attentive and silent, when you go into a place, as I used to tell you of a spiritual tree, wherever you go, everything is like very pristine, very new. Even though you have seen them before, understand? Because when you recall through memory, then you never see again. Oh, last time I come, it was not like that, it was more beautiful. You are thinking and recalling memory. You are never with the moment to experience all of the beauty and wonders of life. Because within the moment, there is so much thing that is happening, but you never see. You never even observe your colleague, your friend, your spiritual friend, the bus driver and all those people you never see. The culture there, the vegetation, the air, the environment, everything is so pristine. You never get to be aware. You are never attentive. You are fully engrossed with your memory and your thought. Oh, that's how you comment. Here not so nice. Last time I went there, better. There the driver better, the food better. Everything is on the thought, the memory. Then you never leave. Because you are busy thinking, planning, commenting, and doing all these things. And this is what heedlessness is all about. When you are aware, mindful, you are different. through the awareness and the mindfulness, you can still talk, you can still joke, you can still understand what people are trying to tell, but you are aware within, and you do not become heedless anymore. Then you can understand. That's why the whole lot of cultivation is very different. When you are attentive, you can only be attentive when you are silent. Just like I explained earlier on, you remember? When you observe something, let's say this bell. Yeah? When you have the word bell, you're not looking already. Yeah. The best example is microphone. Huh? Yeah. When I say, observe this microphone, what you do? You have this word there, microphone. What is there to see? You say, microphone, microphone. You never observe the whole thing. The real microphone got no word, no concept. When you see things as they are, without word, that is the direct seeing, the real seeing, the pure perception. And you can never do that unless you are mindful, unless you are heedful. Otherwise, your memory will come in. Oh, old, new, how come this one like that? Means you are not observing at all. When you observe, there is no word. The mind is just aware. And when you ask him about that microphone, he understands. He can even tell you what it was because there was an awareness of it. That's why when you are attentive, you see a lot of things. And you don't see through memory. You see through your silent mind. And within the silent, there is so much clarity. Because when you are not thinking, you are fully aware. That's why you can recollect and recall what went through your awareness. That's why when you keep your purse or your speck, you maintain that ability to be aware that moment when you place it down, you are not thinking. You will recall where it is. The trouble with most people is when they want to put their purse down, the thought came, the intention is there. Then as they walk, they put their hand. This hand is not aware of what it's doing. It takes the thing. Then when it reached there, how he opened the drawer so he doesn't know, he put the thing there, he push it back, he's still thinking. Then later on, he checked his pocket, purse not there. Where did I put the purse? Oh, then he started to think. Because you are not aware, that's why you cannot recollect. Sometimes when you are aware, then after a while you recollect. But if you are aware, straight away you know where it is. You can be very sure up there. Like just now I put my purse in the drawer. I know where I put it. Then as I speak, I hold, I aware. And with this general awareness, without a center, all of your movement, activity, this nature can be aware. So this is what mindfulness is all about. That's why when it is silent without thought, the moment you are silent without thought, you're already aware. You don't have to try to be aware. You don't have to practice to be aware. Who try to be aware? The thought try to be aware. Who practice? The thought practice. That's why you can never get it. You're just silent and develop the awareness of it. That's why the real cultivation is different. Not what people think. And if you really have the faith, the spiritual faculty will take you there. When your sadha virya is there, then when you pay respect, you do it mindfully. You bow. Body and mind as one. When you walk, body and mind as one. Maintain awareness. Slow down your thinking. Don't slow down your action and activity. Slow down your thinking. Because you check. When you are heedless, your thought proliferate way ahead of your awareness. This thought is non-stop thinking. Even as you are doing something, the mental intention arises already. But before you are aware of what you are doing, you think again. The best example is, like all of a sudden downstairs, you recall through memory, you want to do something upstairs. You want to go up there to do something or take something. Then, as you make the intention, you continue to think. Then how you come out of the seat also you don't know, you're not aware. How you walk also you don't know, you're not aware. How you reach the staircase also you don't know, you're not aware. But as you reach the staircase, then the thought came, what am I here for? You forgot. You can't even remember why you walk there. Oh, see, heedlessness is like that. Because you are not aware at all. You are busy thinking, planning, worrying, reacting, commenting. And this is what heedlessness is all about. That's why the self-centered activity means the sakayadity, the self-delusion, the selfishness, the emphasis that the entity has given to so much of this thing that you deposit in your brain, you accumulate in your brain. And these are the ones that continue to create thought. Your thought is respond to memory. Yeah. Memory, you have to understand there is a purpose. This brain, there is a purpose, like your computer. Huh? You have this RAM. You know what is RAM? Random access memory. The other one is read-only memory. Yeah. The read-only memory, you don't have to remember, understand? Yeah, you need it, you read it. Then when you need the information in the RAM, you access it. That's why random access. Anytime you can access. That's why computer don't have problem like human being. They don't have fear, worry, anxiety, insecurity, sorrow and lamentation. Why? Because they never hold on to their memory. When they need, they retrieve for you. And they never emotional over it. But human being is very different now. Human being, everything they deposit, they give meaning. And the worst is, what do you deposit down there? All of your fearful things, your scars of memory, your unhappy event or situation in life. Because these are the ones that have actually impact upon you, understand? Created so much suffering and fear, that's why it's like, you cannot forget. The memory is not for you to deposit all this psychological fear. This memory is for you to use for technical things, for mechanical things. Like you must remember where you stay, your house address, how you sign your check, who are your loved ones. And what are their names and all those things. Then what do you own? And these are the things that you can have it in your memory. But your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow, your lamentation, all of the emotional, psychological conditioning, these are your scars of memory. And these are the ones that can make you miserable. Understand? When you recall the scars of memory, you recall all your phobia, your unhappy moments, your sorrow, your lamentation, and all this is affliction, suffering. So why do you deposit all this? Whatever happened, happened already. Let the past be the past. It's no more a reality, understand not? Like we went through, 10:30, we have to end. I just finished this one. Like we went through earlier on, what is life? We can relate life to what? Existence. To live life is to go through time. Correct not? We have to exist is to go through time. Correct not? To live life is to exist, to go through time. So what is time? The whole spectrum of time we can define. Past, present, and future. So this defines the whole of time. This defines the whole of life and existence. Of these three, which is the reality. The past is already gone, future yet to come. These two are not reality. But because of your delusion, living beings' delusion, we hold on to the past and the future through our thought we project. We project into the future, we recall into the past. That's how thought has power over you. Thought can make you miserable. They are no more a reality. Past is already gone, no more reality. Future yet to come, also no more reality. So the only reality is what? Present moment. Present moment is what? Moment to moment life passes by within the moment. What are you doing? If you cannot understand this, you cannot understand life. If you cannot understand this, you cannot live life. Because moment to moment you don't believe, you go back and check. unless those who have cultivated, the true cultivator. They are busy thinking, planning, and worrying about life, reacting to life. So much so they never live, because they are never with the moment in silent awareness to be aware of what is going on. You think a lot. You got a lot of fear, worry, anxiety. You plan a lot. You never leave. So this is what the teaching is all about. When you understand, it becomes meaningful, it becomes beautiful. And this one is not a knowledge you cannot learn. You have to cultivate, you have to awaken, you have to reflect, contemplate, and develop your own understanding. You have to straighten your views to develop all this understanding. Then it becomes a part of you. Then you can live this, because it becomes, you become the embodiment of the teaching, and the teaching can manifest within your own form and mind through that understanding. And you get to live the third phase of Dhamma, which is Patipatti, the fruition of your hard work. You reap the reward of your hard work, your cultivation. Okay, with this we end. Shall we rejoice? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. This note are extra. Pamasri, you can have them back. Those who want a copy of the note you don't have, you can take. You want to give to your friend also, you can. We already cover all the three classes, Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday. Okay, now we will do the closing puja. We will recall to mind all of our wholesomeness, the meritorious action that you have cultivated. You have paid respect to Triple Gem. You have developed mindfulness. You have taken refuge, renew your precepts. You have offered rejoicing. You have radiated love and metta. You have listened to the Dhamma, straightened your views. Then we are now transferring these merits to all the devas, share them with the devas, and transfer them to the beings that can receive them, all our departed relatives. Then after that, we will invoke the blessing for the nation. Then you can do your aspiration. Okay, sharing your merits with the devas. Akasata cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditva chirang rakkhantu loka sasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share these merits, and may they long protect the dispensation. Itta vata cham ehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. May all beings share these merits which we have thus acquired, and may all devas rejoice, and may it contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Transfer merits to departed ones and all those who can receive them. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Let these merits accrue to our departed relatives and all those who can receive them, and may they all to be well and happy always. Okay, we will invoke the blessing for the nation. Devo asatu kalena sasa sampati hetu cha pito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko. May the rain fall in due season. May there be a rich and good harvest throughout. May the world be peaceful and prosperous always. May the government of the day, the king and the rulers be righteous. Okay, now you make your aspiration. Ipminna punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patiya. by the grace of these merits that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish and the heedless, but only the wise and the enlightened one until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we pay respect mindfully to Sakyamuni Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones.